Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a bi-weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Clemencia, and we are glad you're here. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church.
The big idea for this episode is the post-quarantine church, an interview with Dr. Tom Rader. Hey man, this is the part of the episode where we're supposed to advertise my book.
All right.
So what do you think we should say?
I don't feel bad about it. It's not a shameless plug. It's literally your book. You've put a lot of work into it.
That's a good point. So you need to pick up a copy. And hey, here's the thing. If you buy a copy and you didn't like it,
right.
Drew said he'll pay for you to ship it back.
That's not what I said. At least an In-N-Out burger. I'll ship to them.
You'll ship them.
If it's on the East Coast, it'll be all spoiled, but it's fine. Hey, I'm in this book too.
You are. You're actually in this book. And I say some things that people don't know about you. It's going to be great. I tell some stories.
All right.
Are you?
Where can people find this book at?
Oh, that's right.
And what it's called.
Okay. So you can pick up this book.
Right.
It's called The Quest for Friendship.
The Quest for Friendship. Insert Galliant music here.
That really is what it is.
Right. It's happening right now.
The Idea Network publishing arm of our network has produced this awesome resource, and I really do appreciate it. It's exciting. It really is a discussion of friendship, and I want you to pick up a copy at ideanetwork.church in the shop tab. It's the very first resource at the very top. You can pick it up, and if you put in the promo code free shipping is yours.
All right.
Yeah.
There it is.
You'll do it now.
The Quest for Friendship. Welcome to the Idea Talks. On this episode, we are having a special guest. Tom Rader is with us to discuss his brand new book, The Post-Quarantine Church. Thanks again so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And anytime I'm with you folks, I get excited. And anything about Idea Network, anything related to the Idea brand, and Josh, what's his name? It's all good.
We really enjoyed having you out to the summit 2 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or 3 years ago at this point.
Not two. Yeah.
And we loved having you speak and your perspective there. So thanks again for your time. And like I said, we're delighted to have you on the podcast.
Yeah. It's also pronounced Ermler, Josh Ermler. And then I'm Tice Like Ice. All right. So Ermler is my partner and Tice Like Ice. But I know you know
he's going to start singing Vanilla Ice soon, pretty for you.
That's so true. Look, Tom, your
name is Jahasa Ice Teeth. Is that what I'm
correct?
Understanding?
You got it. So Thom, I've always always appreciated
your writing.
Now, in your book, The Post-Quarantine Church, by the way, it's a simple read. It's a quick read. Guys, just pick up a copy. You can get it on Amazon very inexpensively. Fantastic read, and you'll want to pick it up soon before it sells out. How about that for a little FOMO,
fear
of missing out? But you do want to pick it up. Hey,
can I tell you one little tidbit about The Post-Quarantine Church?
Yeah.
Post-Quarantine Church right now, this is very self-promoting, so I'm sorry, is number one in three genres at Amazon. And the publisher, Tyndale, put it out with zero marketing. They just put it out there as a test. And so they've had zero marketing on it, and they're kind of blown away.
I've seen it all over the place, and you've always done a great job at being first to the table. I wonder, Dr. Rader, did you sit down on March 21st and start the book? That's what I want to know. Did you start writing this and realizing, oh man, I've got to get this to the table quickly?
I actually got to give credit to Tyndale, Josh. They called and said, we feel like there's an urgency to talk about what's going to happen when churches start regathering. Now, that was back in the late summer of 20. And they said, hey, do you think you can write a book in 3 weeks based upon the observation? I said, well, if it's a short book, I can. And I said, because we've got the data, we've got the interviews that are taking place. So I wrote this book in 19 days. It could not have been written if it was a longer book, but we had all the data and we were ready to go. So it really was this was not my idea. It was the inspiration of the publisher to say, we need to get this book out.
Well, kudos to Tyndale, and kudos to those 19 days where you were able to quarantine yourself away and produce this resource that's been a help to so many. And you're right, I've seen it all over the place. It really is. And not marketed, just people talking about it and so high on the Amazon list. You talk about six specific challenges: gathering differently and better, seize your opportunity to reach the digital world, reconnect with your community near your church, take prayer to a new and powerful level, rethink your facilities for emerging opportunities, and make lasting changes that will make a difference. I'd love to jump into all of these or a few of them, but I really want to begin with what a lot of people are thinking right now post-Easter. Coming out of Easter, a lot of us as pastors are thinking to ourselves, man, I kind of feel like church is back a little bit, you know? I don't want to get too optimistic, but hey, Sunday was great. What's your pulse on a return to normality? Not a return completely, because we've learned so much, like your book talks about, we want to be different than we were before. But what's your pulse on what you're receiving as it relates to data at Church Answers on church attendance and the trends that we're seeing now?
Let's focus on North America right now, because that's where we have the most data. And the inquiries and the information is coming in globally, but we have enough information in North America, particularly to talk to your tribe and Idea Network. And Joshua, here's where we are right now. The median decline in attendance right this moment is somewhere around 30 to 40% of all churches in North America pre-COVID. So 2019 versus now 2021, somewhere around 30 to 40%. Based upon what we are hearing on those who will return and those who likely will not, and then some new ones that will come, that median is going to settle down once we get some level of herd immunity and we get some normalcy in terms of the COVID virus itself. Then we will probably be somewhere around 20%. Now, that is a median point. So that is saying 50% of churches will have an attendance 20% less more than 20%, and then 50% will have it less than 20%. So when it's all said and done, just think about that median point being 20%. Here's another little factoid in all this. Smaller churches are gathering at a higher percentage than larger churches. If you have a church that is above 700 in attendance, if you are typical, your attendance percentage is significantly lower than, say, those churches that are 200 and under in attendance. So those are two clear factoids: the 20% where we think it's going to settle, and then the fact that it's really hitting the larger churches more than the smaller churches.
Wow. You know, I'm not a data researcher, but anecdotally in our network, conversation after conversation with guys that are pastoring churches between 150 and 300, a lot of them at this moment are saying, hey, I don't want to say it too loudly, but we're already back to our numbers, and some of us are growing beyond what's happening. And I say, I don't know. I don't know. What do you think's happening? Because I hear that anecdotally quite a bit.
The larger churches, here's the good and the bad news. The good news is the larger churches were reaching the fringe in the community. So they were reaching the cultural Christians, those who are Christian in name only, those who were unchurched but interested, more than the smaller churches were. Who were the first to leave and not come back? The same people. So the larger churches typically were reaching a swath of people that were the most likely to not return. And with the death of cultural Christianity, and what I mean by that, cultural Christianity is people who are Christians in name only. I would think that your area, Josh, would not have a lot of cultural Christians. You're either a Christian or you're not. In the Bible Belt, traditionally, the South, you have a number of people who say, I'm a Christian, or you have had, but they really aren't. Cultural Christianity is disappearing everywhere, and including the South, and it's almost gone in North America. We are almost to the point now that we're very much like Europe and what has happened to the churches there, with the Christian population being a very small, let's just say this point, a small percentage of the total population. And they have been in a post-Christian era in Europe for most of the nations there. We're now in a post-Christian era. So there was good news and bad news for the larger churches. You were doing a better job overall of reaching that swath of people, but now they haven't returned.
Yeah, fascinating. I definitely see that's going on.
It's a smaller swath of people, but they are of the more committed type, you're saying, of being in this post-Christian or post.
Yes.
Yeah, got it.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, there will be most churches. Here's part of the good news. Most churches will have higher commitment members, attendees, than they had pre-COVID. That's good and bad news again. Higher commitment is good. The bad news is we do want some of those people on the fringes that are not committed at all, because that's the path to know Christ. We'll see how it pans out. And we'll continue to keep you in touch at Church Answers as well.
Well, I'm really interested then to ask the question, what does evangelism look like in the post-quarantine church? I mean, if it's kind of exciting to me to know that we're not going to be reaching out to a bunch of people who are going to tell us they're Christians. They're becoming more dogmatic in their either atheism or anti-religion or no religion or other religion. It's kind of exciting to know my evangelism now is going to be very, very specific. I know the person's going to tell me they're a believer or not a believer. So what does evangelism look like in a post-quarantine church? If our church has shrunk by 20, 30, 40%, what do we see?
Okay, here is something that is absolutely fascinating. Several years ago, in a research project that was published in a book called The Unchurched Next Door, we found that of those non-Christians, only 5% were antagonistic to either a gospel presentation or to an invitation to church. Guess what we're finding now? That number has not changed that much. Jesus said, the harvest is plenty. Pray for workers to go into the harvest field. What he said in first century AD is very much what is happening in 21st century AD. Josh, we don't have a problem with the potential harvest. We have a challenge with the harvesters. When you begin to talk to non-Christians, certainly they may be spiritual but not Christian, or atheist or agnostic. But here's the reality of it. They are open to conversations, and they are open to invitations to church. And so we've got this great harvest field that's out there. And the first thing we have to ask is not how do we do evangelism, but do we do evangelism? And right now, we have a large number of churches that are thinking evangelism is still waiting for people to, quote unquote, come to church. It's as simple and yet as profound as reminding our people that every day they are to pray for an opportunity to have a gospel witness. We challenged one church in Florida as part of a consultation, and they said, what do we do? I said, why don't you do a 90-day challenge? And that 90-day challenge would be as many people as would commit to pray every day for God to give them an opportunity to come in contact with someone with whom they may share the love of Christ every day, a 90-day challenge. They saw their greatest evangelistic harvest just by praying that prayer. I mean, God just said, okay, you want them? We'll put them in front. They did not give them a gospel memorization system, which would be good. They did not give them a evangelism program. They said, pray that prayer. They did it for 90 days, and they had the greatest harvest ever. We've been using a resource at Church Answers called Pray and Go. And that resource is just exploding, where you go in front of a home and you pray for the people in the home, and then you just leave a door hanger and say, we prayed for you, and give contact information. And if it's in a gated community, you get people in that gated community to do it. If it's an apartment complex and you can't get in there at all, you send them letters and you pray and just say, we prayed for you. But that thing is taken off. The point in all of this is the harvest is out there. We just need to send people into the harvest field. They're waiting.
Pray and Go is amazing. And at the Idea Network, we're all about ideas. And if you have not looked up Pray and Go from Church Answers, you've got to do so. It's a great opportunity for you in your evangelistic efforts. And I love that the emphasis is on pray, but I love that it's not any, it's right there equal with go, pray and go. I mean, it really does say exactly what the program is all about. Do you see that there is a niche, a opportunity for, they seem to be cyclical these every couple decades, something like evangelism explosion to rush onto the scene, which was more personal evangelism rather than bring somebody to church. Do you see something rising up in the next couple years or the next decade as it relates to this?
I do. I don't think it is going to be necessarily a memorization gospel program like evangelism, explosion, continuous witness training, four spiritual laws. They had a good season that they were there. It is going to be more about encouraging and equipping our people, both encouraging them that if they ask, God will honor. If they ask someone about their beliefs, God will honor. If they ask someone to come to church, they will honor. I think this next phase that we're going to is going to be and feel more natural. It is going to be something that you simply do. We overuse this phrase, but out of the overflow, if you're praying for opportunities, God's going to give you opportunities. But here's the word that I'm saying to churches all across the world. I said it in Africa yesterday when I spoke virtually, and I've said it in London when I spoke to the Anglicans virtually the previous week. I said, here's your single word, intentionality. If you're not reaching people, maybe one of the reasons you're not reaching people is you're not trying to reach people. That's profound. Even Rainer can figure that out.
So good.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned this in your story earlier. Our church specifically has been such a benefit and beneficiary of you guys doing a consult with our church and having different ideas. One of the things you talk about in the book is rethinking some of your facilities. Can you touch on that just a little bit for us?
Oh, facilities were changing before COVID. And let me just say this. Many people say, look what COVID has done, especially in our churches. COVID has not done anything. What has happened with COVID, it has exposed fault lines that already existed. And it is exaggerated them, exasperated them, and accelerated them. So if your church had an evangelistic problem, you see it more clearly right now. So what we're seeing, facilities were already undergoing changes. And here's some of the dramatic things that we're seeing. First of all, worship center size is smaller. That is just a reality.
Either due to like state mandates or government mandates or just the reality of how it is.
It's just, here's what's happening. Culture and Christians are gravitating more towards smaller worship gatherings. And we realize that intuitively. You remember one of the things that, like with Josh, when I was talking to y'all during the consultation, one of the things that we began to talk about is, should you become not only multi-service, but multi-site as well? That is an intuitive thing that was happening with churches because I realized growth was occurring more naturally horizontally instead of vertically. In other words, instead of getting all the people into one location, now it is more of this horizontal movement where we're opening maybe different sites or even micro sites. And it was only happening with the large churches for a season, but now it's happening across the board. So if you're having more people spread out into different locations and services, then that means you need smaller worship centers. Another thing that has taken place, I grew up in the probably the last peak of some, not everybody would know, I believe most of the people in your tribe would know, of the Sunday school movement. And the Sunday school movement had a great run, especially when it was evangelistic in the 50s and the 60s, and even into the 70s. But the Sunday school movement needed, for the most part, facilities, education facilities, because it was built on on-site groups, on-campus groups. Now we're seeing the groups not meet entirely. It's not their exception to that on-site, but they're gravitating more to other locations. And that has been exacerbated by COVID, by the pandemic, because people got used to working in other locations. They got used to meeting in other locations, usually at home. I mean, I'm thinking about there you are in Las Vegas, and here I am in Nashville, and we're sitting here talking, and you see me with a very proper button-down shirt, but I'm in my shorts. And I know that's I know that that's probably a hard visual at my age.
No, that's okay. Drew's not even wearing pants, yeah, so
flip-flops,
we're fine.
That's the way it is.
Well, I saw you smile when you said that. I won't take but so education facilities are not being built now. Here's another thing. Office space is not being built now. Maybe a little bit of co-working space, but office space is not being built. So facilities are changing all over the place. And see, you folks at Southern Hills were just ahead of your time with some of the challenges you had.
And that's for sure. We have no offices. And you were the first people to come in and praise us. Hey, you didn't build offices. We're like, yeah, was that good? Yeah, you're ahead of the curve. Fantastic.
I remember going to the choir area or something and seeing some people set up there.
Yeah, we would set up, we set up tables and chairs and we worked throughout the week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, does that answer your question since I forgot your question?
No, it does. It really touched on that. I appreciate it.
You know, you talked about the four different multis with us, multi-day, multi-service, multi-site, multi-venue. And we walked away from that and did all four. We're like, okay, fantastic.
Of course you did.
Right. So we did.
In fact, I would have thought that you were created too, that I didn't know. Right. I'm knowing you.
Well, we'll try. But multi-service we'd already done. And some of our audience has never gone to a second or third service. It's one of the things that we talk about at Idea Days and Idea Nights, Idea Summits, that we really help people through going from one service to two service. Multi-day, we did a Saturday night service throughout when we came back from COVID for, months we did. And eventually may go back to a Saturday. We're really thinking about a Thursday night service. Multi-site, we started our second multi-site service. And then multi-venue, one of the great aspects that you talked with me about, and I've talked with a lot of others now about, and that is the opening up your congregation to a multi-ethnic church that might be in your community, that there might be an official partnership or even a merger, which is what happened with us. And it worked out. It has worked out so beautifully. And the gospel has been a bit advanced through the Korean community. And our resources have helped that Korean church truly, I believe, not only grow, but survive through COVID. And I think if there are more partnerships like this multi-venue, multi-ethnic model that you talked about coming out of COVID, it'd be an amazing, amazing thing.
And I am really glad to hear that that both the Korean church and your church became one church instead of they're using your facilities. There is a lot more synergy when that, whether it's multi-ethnic or just some other group, is using your facilities to say we're both part of the same effort, both part of the same church. Either way is good. I like the way you've done it better.
Well, and even in advertising alone throughout Easter, it's so helpful to have on there Korean church at this time or Korean service at this time, and putting that out there when you're mailing out 40, 50, 60,000 flyers, that you can include that, and it just saves, well, literally double the money. It saves half the money on all that kind of marketing and advertising. It's been great. Well, I have a question as it relates specifically to online services. Obviously, the online ministries of our churches have been able to advance the gospel like never before. What I've found beautiful are so many churches that were maybe hesitant to do online giving or online services prior to COVID were like, everybody go to Facebook. Let's all do it. So that was a huge leap forward as it relates to online gospel content being distributed. I guess my question then would be this. The opposite side of that coin, there's a positive side and a negative. The negative side of that would be this question that a lot of pastors are beginning to have, and that is, when will online church become more of a hindrance than a help? At what point do we might have to rethink our online service, depending on your ecclesiology, of course, your online service that might be maybe holding people back from coming in? A lot of guys are questioning that at this point. What do I do there? What are your thoughts?
I don't think it's going to happen. That's my thought.
Really?
But basically, if I hear you correctly, Josh, the question that you're asking is, will online cannibalize in-person
yes,
service?
Yes, that's it.
Will it hurt in-person services? I do not think it will. I think that if you look at the net who will end up flowing to the in-person from online versus those who will opt out for in-line when they could go in person, the net positive is going to be significantly greater. Now, let me caveat that. I caveat it with this. There has to be a sense of intentionality with your online service. If you just say online is here, in person is here, what you have done is you have made them competitors. What you need to do is make them complementary to one another. If you think of your online service as an opportunity, first of all, for a small group of people to be in service who physically can't be, that's one thing. But then for those who are located in your area who could be in the online service, you need to start thinking about this. What can we do? And I don't like to use the funnel metaphor because it sounds like it's marketing, but I'm going to use it. We're beginning to see churches that use the online service as a funnel to the in-person service. They are beginning to see a steady, it's small now, but I do believe it's going to grow, stream of people move from online to in-person. How are they doing it? One of the most common ways that they're doing it is, number one, they're making certain that they have some type of digital card that someone can fill out just so that you can connect with them. That's number one. Number two, they are creating groups from the online service. And so you have an online service, say it's Facebook or YouTube, or it's embedded on your site, and you have this online service, you should be striving to build a group or two or three that is digital, like a Zoom group. And there you start seeing faces, and they start connecting with one another. It is from that point that you make certain that you have someone who is in your in-person in each group. They start connecting with them. The relationships develop digitally, and then the invitations begin to flow for coffee. Hey, I'd love to meet you for coffee somewhere. And then you get them to in-person. If you do that, your digital service is going to be one of your biggest sources of getting people to your in-person service. I don't buy the competition or the cannibalization if you do it right.
Brilliant. Love that.
Do you have some specific examples of churches that have done that really well?
I don't have the churches. I have, you're asking me to remember names of churches.
Sure.
that I have of the few thousand churches that I've worked with. I do not have a name of a church that I could just say, okay, I know that this church is doing it well. What I will say, what we have seen in many churches that are in their incipient stage very early is that it seems like it's going to work. And I don't know of any reason why it shouldn't. It's too early to say this is a definitive trend, but the thing you have to go, remember that word I said, intentionality. If there's no intentionality for evangelism, there's no evangelism. If there's no intentionality to get people into the in-person service, it's probably not going to happen.
I do think it's brilliant. It really is going back to what we had been doing prior, all of us. I mean, fill out your connection card and get them in a small group. Fill out your connection card, get them in a small group. Well, we can do these two steps. If the goal is to get them into in person, fill out a connection card online, get into a small group online. Hey, let's meet up for coffee. Hey, come visit on Easter or come visit during this summer event. Fantastic. I absolutely love that.
Absolutely. I love it too. We'll give you reports and church names as this begins to unfold. I don't even remember my grandchildren's names.
Good. Great. If y'all aren't part of Church Answers, we encourage you to go and be a part of it. It's a fantastic resource. I know Fred is on there every single day. Fred Murray loves Church Answers, and so do I. Well, you know, I really just want you to sum up at the end. Tom, we really appreciate you coming on here. Still awkward for me to call you Tom, Dr. Rainer. My background always makes me say that. But I got to tell you, we really appreciate you around here. I want to know this. As you look to the rest of 2021 and into 2022, what excites you the most about what's coming up next? I mean, we're excited as a network. We're excited as pastors. We see the optimism. We know that there are some dangers. We know there are concerns. We know there are pitfalls. But what excites you most about what's coming up in the next 6 to 12 months in evangelicalism, specifically here in America?
It sounds like a statement of specificity. I would rather give a general answer to a question of specificity. Number one, what we have right now as we move into the regathering stage is a blank slate. we can rethink how we have done church. And quite frankly, there's some things that we do methodologically that are not theologically stamped that in any particular way. We just do them methodologically so that we can rethink. Number two, I am seeing prayer and evangelism rise to the forefront of what is taking place in churches around the world. And as prayer and evangelism goes to the forefront, the gospel gets to the forefront, the power of the Holy Spirit works in ways that we could never predict. I'm not going to say that we're about to see some of our greatest awakenings ever, because I'm not ready to be prophetic lest I get stoned. But I do want to say this. I will not be surprised if we see some of our greatest days ahead if churches continue to put prayer and evangelism at the forefront.
Wow, man, that is exciting. Well, we're thankful for you. We really are, Tom. We're thankful for Sam. He's been a great help as well. And we're thankful to have you guys part of the network. It's always been a blessing. And we look forward to connecting again very soon.
We love it. Thank you, Josh. Thank you both.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.